Hey, yo, listen, it's going down just like this.
Spread the word and let your voice be heard. It's Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station.
And a very good morning to you. Welcome to today's edition of Praise in the City. I'm Tiffany Bacon. Thank you so much for joining me. You're definitely going to want to turn your radio up today. This week in the news has been a little bit more than many of us can handle. And we are going to spend this hour discussing the topic of shots fired, the profiling and execution of black men. This is definitely going to be a hot topic. Many people have strong feelings about what's going on. I'm going to ask that you really listen carefully to our panelists, but I encourage you to call in with your thoughts on what's been going on in Ferguson. So I will give you the number to give us a call in just a matter of minutes. But we do have a wonderful group of panelists who are going to talk about what has been going on and what should be going on henceforth. So we're going to start off the morning with a moment of inspiration. But if you're not fully awake yet, take these few minutes to really wake up and listen. Maybe Google what's been going on. If you're not aware of what's been happening in Ferguson, be prepared for today's discussion because it will be heavy. So stay with us. We have a moment of inspiration starting now.
Withholding nothing, I surrender all to you. Everything I give to you. Withholding nothing, withholding nothing.
Come on, you say.
Yeah.
withholding nothing, withholding nothing.
We are Praise 103.9 FM. Good morning. This is Praise in the City. I thank you so much for joining us. I hope that you are up and alert and ready to have today's discussion. In light of what's been going on in Ferguson, there is so much to talk about. Many people have strong opinions about the murder of Mike Brown. We are asking that you call in and voice your opinion, but also listen to what the panelists have to say. I'm going to ask some specific questions to the panelists, and I would like for you to listen to what they have to say, but also voice your opinion on what's been going on in the last couple of weeks. So the phone number to reach us, 215-263-1039. Again, that's 215-263-1039. We invite you to give us a call. We are talking about shots fired, the profiling and execution of black men. So I have an awesome panel joining me this morning. In studio, we have Donald Chisholm II, Michael Court, and joining us via the telephone, our friend, the news media maven, Miss Denise Clay, joining us on the line. Thank you so much, guys, for joining us this morning. Thank you for being a part of the show. Good morning. All right. Denise, are you there?
I am. Thank you for inviting me. Although, you know, with the gentleman you have there, I'm hoping I'll be able to add something to what's probably going to be a great discussion.
Yes, and we do want to keep it that. And I do want to put, we also have another one of our panelists who is joining us right now, Mr. Lee Colston, who is joining us on the phone. Good morning, Lee. Thank you for being a part of the panel this morning.
Good morning, Tiffany. Thanks for having me.
All right. Fantastic. So we're going to start with Denise. Just if you can, in your most concise news way, explain what has been going on over the past couple of weeks in Ferguson for anyone who is not completely aware. And I do know there are some people who say, I'm not on Facebook, I'm not on social media, and I stop watching the news because it's too depressing. For anyone who is not completely aware of what's going on, can you just give us a synopsis of what has happened?
Well, last Saturday, a young man named Michael Brown was shot by police in Ferguson, Missouri, the reason why it seems to have caused what's going on a week of protests, some of which have turned into riots, is the fact that he was shot by police. He was unarmed. He had his hands up. And that, according to eyewitness accounts, there was really no reason for the police to have shot him as many times as they did.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why it's been turning, it started out as peaceful protests. There was what is characterized as a riot on Sunday night, which led to some property destruction.
Mm-hmm.
And on Wednesday, and this is when people really started to pay attention to what was going on in Ferguson, because we started to see things that just kind of blew our minds. On Wednesday, you saw the police in St. Louis County, I think it's the county sheriff's office, come to Ferguson and I guess this was their way of trying to maintain calm and order in the city.
Mm-hmm.
But you kind of can't do that with tanks and semi-automatic weapons and people dressed in military gear because using tear gas as a weapon. In fact, people were getting tear gassed in their own yards.
Mm-hmm.
They were getting tear gassed in their own houses. So on Wednesday night, basically, and forgive me for how I'm going to put this, because this is a gospel station.
Yes, all, please remember it is a gospel station.
all heck broke loose.
Yeah.
Because in addition to the tear gas and the police, in these tanks, trying to get people to disperse and using some pretty unfriendly ways to do it, they started arresting members of the press two reporters, one from the Huffington Post, one from the Washington Post, got arrested at a McDonald's for not getting out of there fast enough. They were charging their electronic devices so they could continue to cover the story. A reporter from Al Jazeera America was doing a live shot, and there was no one else around, so it was kind of odd that he got tear gassed and his equipment was stolen. The next night, they brought in a gentleman from the Highway Patrol, because the governor, Governor Jay Nixon, finally took a look at the situation and said, well, you know, maybe I need to say something about this. Of course, it didn't help that he was prompted to do that by a call from President Obama, who said, no, you do need to do something about this. And the police in Ferguson have since been relieved of their command. But yesterday they had a press conference in which they announced the name of the police officer who actually did the shooting. And he has been out of town. They pretty much got him out of town before they announced who he was, because they were afraid for his life, they say. And also the police chief held in this particular news conference said that Michael Brown stole some cigars and that's why he was shot. But then he started to backtrack on that a little bit, because people were saying he, you know, was a suspect in this cigar theft like a full day before he was shot. And what does that have to do with you shooting him four times, twice in the back? So, you know, that's pretty much that's the quickest and dirtiest summary I can give you to the whole thing.
Right.
But what it's, you know, what it's kind of done is made everyone start to pay attention to the fact that, hey, we have police departments running around in tanks. And two, this is the fourth unarmed black man that has died at the hands of police in this month alone, in the month of August.
Right.
In fact, on Monday night, a man was killed in Los Angeles. A man with mental health issues got killed by the police in, you know, in Los Angeles. So, you know, Michael Brown wasn't even the only person killed this way this week. So, you know, this is starting to become an epidemic a little bit.
All right. So, Denise, thank you so much for the basic timeline and rundown of what has been going on. This is an open forum. I have an esteemed panel joining us this morning to talk about the events in Ferguson and to talk about profiling and to talk about these murders, like you said, of four black men in the course of the month. Who were unarmed, and they were killed at the hands of police, and investigations are ongoing and all like that. We invite you to give us a call with your take on the topic. Again, while you are calling and formulating your opinion, I'm sure you've already formulated it, but do listen to what the panelists have to say as well. I invite you to give us a call, 215-263-1039. That is how you can reach us, 215-263-1039. I'm going to do a bit of a round robin, staying on the phone line. Joining us is also Lee Edward Colston, and I thank you so much for joining us. I know for a fact that you have very deep opinions about what's happening. How does all of this make you feel as a young black man?
Well, I feel hunted, unfortunately. And one of the things that I've been discussing with my friends is, like, you know, what we can, you know, what actually can we do, you know, and there's a time for talk and there's a time for action. And I feel like we're in this, you know, the country's in this place of unrest for the simple fact that this is something, there's something that's called accumulated fatigue. And I feel like that's what's happening right now. And I think this is kind of like the flashpoint for all of the unrest and all of the angst that we've been feeling, you know, not only as a people and through the history of the country, but more recently, you know, from the events from, you know, Trayvon Martin on down. It's just the frequency of it is just getting too much.
All right. Good stuff. Michael Cord joining us in studio. Michael, your thoughts?
One of the things I want to point out at the beginning is what you mentioned in regard to what's going on. I think the best way to describe what's going on in Ferguson, throughout Missouri, and throughout the country is modern-day lynching of black men. When I say lynching, I mean it in a technical legal sense. Lynching is defined as an extrajudicial form of capital punishment. And that's exactly what happens when these white cops encounter black people. And it's really important that black folks and other folks get righteously indignant about what's going on. But what we have to do is something different from what we've been doing. No disrespect to the civil rights leaders. I'm a lawyer today because they fought the good fight to get me where I am. But we can't use old solutions for new problems. We got to do more than just rallying and marching and that kind of thing. We got to ramp up the activism. And toward the end of this discussion today, I'd like to talk about some proposed solutions. But what we're victimized by now is a form of extrajudicial modern day lynching. And one thing I want to say in summary very quickly is it's not just people like the young man who was murdered, or like Sean Bell or Amadou Diallo or people like that. I mean, it's bigger than that. People would be shocked to know that from the studies put out by the federal government, about 100 black men a year are killed by police officers, white police officers in the United States. It's actually 96, rounded off to 100 a year. How can that be? And nobody's really doing anything to express that righteous indignation in an effective way. I do have some solutions, and I'd be happy to share those toward the end.
All right. Thank you, Michael. Let's go to Donald. Your thoughts.
You know, my thoughts are a little angry. I'm a little patient sometimes, but this type of behavior always angers me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I try to not cloud myself that way. But I do think that it has to be a sense of anger, because I remember when I was a kid and I was 18, 19, right around the city with all my friends, and we seemed to get bothered by cops very, very frequently. And that's one of the reasons I became an attorney, because it really pissed me off. And I have two sons, 24 and 18. And it was just tough explaining to them that despite the fact that you may be doing nothing wrong, you can't do certain things because an officer may take it the wrong way. And I think for me, all I see when I see these kids run around is thinking one day I get this phone call that my 18-year-old is shot, my 24-year-old is shot. They got good grades, all that's going on. They was playing with their friends, and one of their friends, you know, stole a Snickers bar, and he doesn't come home as a result of that. So I'm not that I'm a fan of looting and all those other things that are going on in Ferguson, but I am a fan of the anger. I think a lot of us have gotten upset. A lot of us has gotten a little bit, you know, uneasy. But I don't think that's enough. You know, I think anger at this point is what's absolutely necessary, because that's the only way these individuals out here who have a say will make a difference.
All right. Thank you guys for your initial comments. We are opening the forum to you, the listening audience, for your thoughts on what's been going on in Ferguson, the Michael Brown case, and other cases like it that have been going on in the past month. Give us a call, 215-263-1039. We're going to take a call before I get back to you, my panelists. Catherine is on the line from Philadelphia. Catherine, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning, Tiffany.
Yes, good morning.
You know, Tiffany, I want to say this. I don't see why the black men of America, not just talking about the city, America, don't see what's going on. This is a gospel channel. And what the only weapon that we're going to use against this, first, look what happened down and when Moses was to let the people go. It was a form of genocide. And that's what they're using. They took the jobs away. They don't want to give you nothing. They lock up all the black men so they don't produce children. So this is a form of genocide. Now they resort to killing. So the only thing that we have to do as black men, I mean black men who has the power of God, will listen to what he said. If my people who are called by my name would humble themselves and pray, then he will hear from heaven and heal the land. So all these mayors in Philadelphia, the black mayor, they got titles but no power. Nothing is never done about what they do to us. We don't fight back with the only weapon that we have. Mm-hmm. You know, even if we have guns, what good is it going to do? The mm-hmm. tear gases, what did they do in Philadelphia with the move people? They bombed with all those children. Mm-hmm. Wilson Good, I take full responsibility. For mm-hmm. what? He didn't do it. He allowed it. Mm-hmm. So that's what the black men of Philadelphia has to do everywhere in America. Stop letting them do this by prayer. Okay. Go to the source, the powerful source. And okay. that's all I have to say.
Catherine, I thank you so much for, one, listening to the program, and two, for voicing your opinion this morning. Thank you so much for your call.
Thank you very much.
All right. You have an awesome day. I want to present this question to the panelists. I've spent a lot of time in the last week or so listening, watching Facebook in particular, my timeline, reading various comments, and I definitely get frustrated by those who don't seem to understand why we are outraged. Comments like, we always jump to racism, jump to the defensive, don't wait for the information to come out. Can you each, concisely, in your own way, explain to someone who does not understand why we should be outraged? And I'll start with Michael.
I answer that by posing a question. I say to the people who say it's not race-based, I say this. If tomorrow you had to go to trial as a defendant in a criminal case anywhere in America, and you could go as a black male defendant or a white male defendant, which would you choose? Or it's 3 o'clock in the morning, you're driving through a major city, and lights and sirens go off behind you, and the police officer is about to confront you. If you could be a white male driver of that car or a black male driver of that car at the time the cop confronts you, which would you choose? Well, the answer to both is white. Why? Because white people are treated differently. One other thing I'll say, why is it that the people who are killed by cops are killed primarily by white cops and the victims are black? If this thing were reversed and black cops were killing white victims at the same rate, this problem would have been resolved before it started.
All right. Thank you. Donald.
Yeah, I will say I probably don't have a concise one because those people actually kind of get underneath my skin.
Yes, I do understand. That's why I said concise. The reason why I challenged you all with the concise, because this is a topic that breeds a lot of emotion. And when we get into emotion, sometimes we have our point, but we can pull in a lot of other points. Mm-hmm. So if we can really point mm-hmm. our point, mm-hmm. it might actually penetrate the person that does not understand.
I say this, and I use this term pretty frequently. To me, in this situation, if you don't see the pattern that continues to mm-hmm. permeate, then it's tough to have a discussion because we don't mm-hmm. have a point where we agree. But I say, some people say, well, let's do this. You need Malcolm, mm-hmm. you need Martin, and sometimes you need Marcus Garvey. Mm-hmm. I say that because sometimes, depending on what's going on, you need to address it with a turn your face, pray, peaceful vigil. But there's a point where you have to get angry. And I'm going to say it a million times today. And the people who are still passive aren't getting angry. And they're causing us to be angry at them by diverting attention from that and black on black crime. So when I talk to these people, all I say is, listen, just pay attention. Mm-hmm. Pay attention to what's happening. Mm-hmm. And if you are not bothered by this, I'll just have another discussion with someone else.
Okay. Good thoughts. Lee.
It's easy to, you know, say that, like, you know, oh, why is everything about race? But the only time one can say that is when one is protected by white privilege. And white privilege offers all the time, it allows you to, you know, to have the comfort of distance from an experience. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, it's like to divorce your race away from your identity. It's impossible. So mm-hmm. when, you know, one says that, you know, like, oh, like, you know, why do we want to make this about race? Why do we make it a topic about race? It's because it is. And let's just be frank about that. So in the era of Jim Crow, every way that it was possible to oppress African-Americans, you know, through voting, through housing discrimination, through jobs, through education, through the justice and penal system. You can do that today by classifying someone as a criminal, and that makes it still, that makes it legal. So if you're a felon, you can't vote, you know, you're not able to participate in the justice system, you know, i.e. being a part of a jury, you're not able to get federal income to help you with, you know, like, I, you know, through the FAFSA, through for tuition for college, you know, like every way that it was possible to marginalize Black people then, you know, under legalized Jim Crow, you can do that as a felon. And one of the benefits, you know, and I say that with quotation fingers, is that you can also lynch Black men too. So if you're a felon, then it's like, oh, well, because this kid allegedly stole some cigars, then that automatically cancels out his life. So we can kill him and then kill him again, you know, after he's dead, you know, in the media, because his life didn't have value at that point. And it's just wrong.
Okay. Good stuff. Thank you, Lee. And Denise, your thoughts?
Well, one thing I am really tired of, one phrase I am tired of seeing is the phrase black on black crime. And I'll tell you why. Because whenever something like this happens, and it's becoming a thing, like a young black man, a young unarmed black man, and a white person with a gun end up in a confrontation. The black kid ends up in the morgue. People get mad. They take to the streets. They say this is wrong. Then you always inevitably have somebody who says, well, what about black on black crime? Forgetting that most crime is intraracial anyway. And what kills me about that is it says basically that people of color do not have the right to multitask in terms of their grief. I wrote a piece for SolomonJones.com, which basically said that no one has the right to tell black people what they are allowed to grieve about. I am just as allowed to grieve and get angry at the death of Michael Brown as I am to grieve and be angry about the deaths of the kids I used to teach out in Southwest Philly who have probably shot each other. And what we need to start saying as a community is, A, we have the right to our grief, and that grief is ours, and you can't tell us what to do with it. And we also need to start saying that we're tired of there being a whole second set of rules for how our children, particularly our male children, are allowed to conduct themselves. I think that any black kid that wants to walk down the street wearing a hooded sweatshirt in the wintertime should be able to do that without the fear of winding up in the morgue with a toe tag on them. And until we start, you know, saying we've had about enough of this, and we expect the legal system to, you know, conduct itself in a way where people aren't allowed to do this and aren't allowed to get away with this, you know, it's going to keep happening. Like I said, we have four people in just this month alone
that we know of
who have died at the hands of authorities unarmed. One man was choked to death over loose cigarettes. And that kind of sticks with you. I mean, you try to be impartial as a news person, but there's just some things that make you say, are you kidding me?
And these are several of them. We're going to have to take a break right here. But as I take a break, for those of you, my listening audience, who have called in and you're on the line, please stay on the line. We're just going to take a brief break. We're going to get right to your comments and your calls. If you have not called in to express your opinion, we encourage you to do so at 215-263-1039. We will continue with our discussion, Shots Fired, the Profiling and Execution of Black Men, when we return after this.
You're listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station. Now back to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's inspiration station.
And a very good morning to you. We are talking about a very serious subject. I title today's topic, shots fired, the profiling and execution of black men. And I thank you so much for listening to the program. If you can't get through, just know we're going to run through our comments on the phone, and just do your best to call back. If you have a comment, just do your best to call back. 215-263-1039. To my panelists, hold tight. Listen to what our listeners have to say. We're going to start with Edward calling in on line 4. Edward, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning. How you doing? It's a pleasure to be a part of this. I'm a resident of Philadelphia, and I'm also a veteran. And when I remember, my job was in a mortuary, and our numbers at the time from Iraq weren't more than the deaths in Philadelphia. And the complexion of murders just were us. And a lot with the police department and the way it has been, I think we have the right to be upset, and I've been upset a long time, but being angry wasn't enough. So I started to do something about it, because I don't think this is fair. I don't think it's just. I don't even think that it's right. What I do think, it will change if we did one thing, and I learned to do this with the young men here. I start building better men. So what I did was make sure we had the IDs, got into the schools, prepared them with the reading, even the preparation of our appearance. Because we're still going to be, they're going to point their fingers at us, but if the pants aren't hanging down, if the attitude is better, and it's more of a diversion of the older brothers that are out here talking to the younger brothers and preparing them to be better men. So, I'm angry, but I'm working on it, because my anger can last forever, but my work has shown. So I've had young men who are now firemen. They're in the military. Mm-hmm. They're raising families, and they don't look like the person. So when they come up and they come at you, you don't look like that. It's going to be hard for them to lie in court and say, well, he looked like that person when he has ID. He's with his family. And even though those situations occur, but I think it will change. We just need to work a little harder on our people faster, because they're not working with their people who are doing the shooting.
All right. Edward, I want to give at least one or two of our panelists a chance to respond to your comment. And here's the thing, though, because we have a lot of calls, which I anticipated. So we are going to have to move some of it along. And I just apologize in advance. I don't want you all, panelists and listeners, to feel rushed. I just know that we only have an hour, and I want as many people to comment as possible. Michael, I see you shaking your head, and then I'll go to Lee, because I can't see you shaking your head, but I feel you shaking your head. Okay, Michael.
Well, yeah, I agree with what the last caller, Edward, said, that work must be done. But even beyond the long-term stuff about getting black people into certain professions, firemen, whatever, we got to deal with the situation now. How do we stop cops today from killing black people? Well, there's a number of ways, and I don't have enough time to go into everything, but I will say this. There are 50 states in the United States, and people would be surprised to know that 44 of those states, including Pennsylvania, are open carry states. So you look at the Tea Party, for example, that feels that the Second Amendment allows them to arm themselves and to defend themselves. Am I saying right now we should have a shootout with cops? No, but I'm saying that we should be in a position to abide by the law, and because Pennsylvania is one of 44 states that has this open carry, we should do that. And one quick thing I do want to add, in Indiana, February this year, they amended their law. Every state has what we call justification of self-defense, but Indiana in February of this year clearly said that not only can you shoot back at a bad guy trying to attack you, but if that bad guy happens to have a badge and a gun, you can also defend yourself in that case. So I agree with Edward that there's a long-term solution, but right now we got to stop the bleeding.
Okay, and let's Lee have a chance to comment.
Okay, so there are a couple of things. One, you know, yes, I feel like we have personal responsibility to make sure that, you know, that we're respectful and groomed well and all of that jazz. But on the flip side, that's the opposite of white privilege, whereas white folks don't have to worry about that. So you can dress how you want to and not have to feel like you have a target on your back. The other thing, too, about as far as like how to create accountability for the police, is that police should be wearing the front-facing cameras. In California, they implemented front-facing cameras for police officers, and civil complaints dropped drastically. Mm-hmm. But because there's better policing happening, because there's more accountability. The other thing, too, is like the definition of disorderly conduct has to be revised and has to be made more specific. Because what police are doing is that they're using disorderly conduct as a gateway to doing basically whatever you want. I can slap a disorderly conduct charge on you, and it gives me carte blanche to say that you did, you know, you looked at me funny. I read an article last night on Huffington Post where they charged him, police charged a man with destruction of government property because he bled on them after they beat him. And so, like, how, what kind of accountability are we creating in police? And this has to happen on a, not only a judicial level, but this has to happen with our elected officials. Mm-hmm. We have to have some kind of active change and relanguaging of the laws that are in, that are all the laws that are on the books now, to make it more specific so that police just can't, you know, like that, that there isn't that kind of gray area and you looked at me wrong, so you're being, you know, you're being disorderly, so I can, you know, I can do whatever to you. The other thing, too, is like we also have the right to, like when those police, those front-facing police cameras aren't in play, we have the right to film the police and to film police interaction. But police don't want to be filmed, and then that also creates a lot of, you know, confrontations as well. So it's a multi-tiered thing, but it ultimately it starts first with our government and with the changing of the laws, and also respecting the laws that are already in play and more accountability.
All right. Thank you, Lee Edward. Thank you so much for your phone call, and thank you for listening this morning.
You're welcome. Thank you.
All right. Take care. Let's go to Denise calling in from New Jersey. Not the Denise on our panel, but another Denise. Denise, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning, Tiffany. I live in a predominantly white neighborhood, and my son was 11 years old, and he had some problems with some kids. About flash mob is what they called it, came to my house, wanted to fight him, and I called the police. When the police came out, my son was the only black one there. He took and pepper sprayed my 11-year-old son in his face. Mm. My daughter jumped on my son to kind of get him to the ground to kind of wash his face off. This officer, he unsnaps his gun like he's ready to shoot. I jumped in front of him. I said, oh, wait a minute. I said, I called you. I live here. Mm. I live here. These kids came to my house, and you're attacking my son. Mm. Attacking my son. You don't even know the situation. He proceeded to, my son was trying to get up to go wash his face. He pepper sprayed him while he was down on the ground. Mm. For 3 months afterwards, anybody and everybody that had come to my house to visit were getting pulled over by these police officers. I had to hire an attorney to get this township to stop what they were doing. It's absolutely ridiculous. My son is now 14. He is a sophomore. He's part of the National Honor Society. He plays football. He wrestles. He plays baseball for the township. These other kids, a couple of them got records, and the police knew who they were when they pulled up on the scene. Mm. Why assume that it's the black child? And this is what I have to keep continually telling my son. I have older children who are grown, who have been through this, who know. I have to continually tell my 14-year-old, it doesn't matter how well you're behaved. Curfew is 10 o'clock. If you're going to be later than 10 o'clock, I need to come and get you because I can't have you walk in the street.
Denise, I am so sorry to hear about your story. I do want to give two of our panelists a chance to respond to you. I'm going to start with Denise, the other Denise who is on our panel, give you a chance to speak.
Wow. I kind of don't have words except to say that, unfortunately, what she is describing, we also have this myth going on where is that where you have, and I've had black people argue with me about this, where
It's about how you dress and how you conduct yourself. And if you don't wear certain things or you don't act certain ways, the police won't bother you. And what we're starting to find out and what my namesake is pretty much saying here is it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. And it should. Well, not it shouldn't necessarily matter how you're dressed, but if you call the police for assistance, you shouldn't have to be afraid of what happens when they come to your house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you called them for assistance. It shouldn't be that you're saying, hey, wait a minute, I called you. You shouldn't have to make that explanation.
Right. Okay, Denise, thank you so much for Denise that just spoke. Thank you so much for your comment. Donald, I'll give you a chance to respond.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
I keep doing that to tone down the anger. I just believe that society has allowed the young black male of any age to become a free target. And that instance in her home just showed that when the gentleman came in, his attitude was to go towards his subconscious target. And when we all talk about, you know, getting dressed and doing whatever, like I have a hoodie on this morning. It's chilly outside. Not a heavy hoodie, but just a hoodie in itself. And there was a time where, you know what else we couldn't wear? White t-shirts. They keep changing our outfits to make it seem like it's the outfit they're going after. And it's not. It's the target. So no matter what we wear, it's going to happen. The guy who actually was in New York who got killed on his wedding evening day wasn't wearing a hoodie.
Sean Bell.
The guy that got killed at Fruitvale Station was just sitting there with his handcuffs behind
Oscar
his back.
Grant.
It's the target. And I think we have to recognize that. And I think where it does start is mutual respect. Just because, you know, the officer coming in with an attitude changes everything. Like, because we're still men, and black men are probably the worst to come at with an attitude. And when the cops come in, just like she did in that house, and say, listen, I'm going to spray this kid, and I'm going to spray him again. It's that attitude. And that's how they are towards black men. It's just, you know, that has to change. You have to have mutual respect.
All right. Thank you, Denise, with the story who called in. Thank you so much for sharing. I'm so sorry to hear about that. That is enraging. Yes. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you for sharing your story.
Thank you. God bless.
All right. God bless you as well. Let's go to Angel calling in from Glenside. We do have like a few more minutes. I'm going to, I don't know, should I put the phone number out, Larry? Do we have enough time to put the phone number out for anyone else to call in? Okay, I will say this before we go to Angel calling in from Glenside. If you have other comments that you were not able to express on the show today, please go to our go to our Facebook page, Praise in the City on Facebook. First, like us, then post your comment. We would still like to hear what you have to say, hear your stories, hear your accounts. So please go to Praise in the City on Facebook.com. Let's go to Angel calling in from Glenside. Angel, good morning. You're live on the air.
Good morning. Hi. I give much respect to the panel. I have a huge respect and esteem for Mr. Cord in particular. All right. I had four comments. They're going to be real quick. First comment I had is I watched a panel a while ago on the same topic, but more in profiling in general. And the bottom conclusion of it, which I firmly agree with, is that you have to hit the county or the police department or whoever it be monetarily, and that's the only thing that will be effective. So that's my first point. My second point is that I think, as from a godly viewpoint, that Christians all over America, all over the world, whatever nationality, complexion, need to get involved. I think this is a time to bring your Christian conscience to bear. This is a time for the legal people to do their pro bono work, to do whatever needs to be done. Whoever has a gift that can be helpful in this situation, this is the time. Now, why am I saying this? Because it's a kid. These are kids. Now, this is the time to bring your conscience to bear. This is it. Whether you be white, black, Hispanic, whether you're Oriental, this is it. And then the other thing that I wanted to say about that is that the other reason why they need to bring their conscience to bear is because they've experienced it at some level, some type of discrimination, some type of unfairness, harassment. Whether if they haven't experienced it, then their past ancestors have. They need to think about it, because if it's going to be allowed for our race, who knows when and where it'll be allowed for their race. Then the third thing I had to say is our children, I don't know, it seems like some of our generation of children, probably not all of them, need to be aware when something is racist. Because some of our generations have become, our children have become lax regarding it. They're not aware of it because they haven't lived it at a high level that we, maybe our generations, have lived it. So they need to be made aware, whether it be at church, whether it be in school. I mean, the African-American history classes need to be strong to bear upon them of of the situation, to let them know. And then lastly, I think the president, I don't think it's any accident that God has placed them there. And yes, I am saying God has placed them there because it says that in the Bible. I don't think it's any accident that God has him there. And I think he needs to continue to be involved as much, whenever and however he can be. And that's what I have to say.
All right. Angel, thank you so much for your comment. I definitely thank you for listening this morning and for making your comments today. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
In the essence of time, I didn't give let the panelists have a chance to respond to Angel, just because we are literally at the end of the show. So in 30 seconds or less? Okay. In 30 seconds, I would like for each panelist to express what it is that you would like for a person who still does not get it. What is it that you need, not want, need them to understand about this and all of the things that we do not hear about in the news? I will start with Michael. I'll start with the in-studio and close with the on-the-phone panelists. So, Michael, start.
Du Bois, a long time ago, said the problem of the 20th century is the problem of the color line. That applies as equally today. Racism is rampant in the police department. And don't tell me that because black cops are also victimizing black people, that it's not racism. It's racism based on the victim, not the victimizer. And the victim in all these cases tends to be young black men. What can we do about it? In my last 20 seconds, there's a petition at petition.org that's calling for mandatory police body cameras in Ferguson and then ultimately nationwide. So go to change.org, check out the petition for body cameras. And finally, I'm a part of a group called ATAC, ATAC, Avenging the Ancestors Coalition. We meet on a monthly basis and we're focusing specifically on the issue of police brutality. You can't just be angry. You got to be activist.
Thank you. Donald.
Yeah, I would just suggest that person pay attention, participate, and become a part of something that's bigger than themselves. Generally, those individuals don't have any experience to have seen something like that, and everything comes from the media's perspective. But if you talk to someone and participate, you will get the feeling of their anger and how you can't continually justify that it only happens to certain people. Mm. So that's what I would suggest.
Thank you much. Denise.
What I would like people to understand is what their rights are. You have the right to gather with people. You have the right to speak your mind. I would like everyone to understand that, yes, the Constitution applies to you too, and make sure that you know this, so that when you find yourself in situations where you need to, you know, express your views and enforce your rights, you know what you're talking about.
All right. And finally, Lee.
I think that, I mean, we're in an age now where the black body doesn't belong to the black person anymore. And, you know, when I have to consider, like, you know, what I'm wearing, like, and if I decide to wear a hoodie to walk down the street, that doesn't give people carte blanche to assault me, hurt me, or, you know, or murder me. I mean, that's the equivalent of telling a woman, like, you know, you can't wear that dress because you'll be raped. You just shouldn't rape. That's just wrong, you know? And so, like, to kind of impose the same restrictions on, you know, black men, like, you know, don't wear that hoodie, don't wear that jacket. Well, what is the uniform that I'm supposed to wear? You know, the uniform, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. And how do we reconcile that. As for folks who don't quote unquote get it, I think part of the conversation needs to be about not just white guilt, because what guilt is that something that you've done. Shame, I think, is the larger issue, because shame is what you are. And how do we reconcile white shame so that we can begin to move the conversation forward? Shame shrinks you. You know, how do we turn that into an encouraging conversation so that it can be, you know, it can move both directions, so that we can address, you know, our legacy as Americans, you know, both black and white, but also what we're going to do to move forward. Because not all cops are evil. Not all white cops are evil. Not everybody's bad, you know, but there are systems in place that start to perpetuate that, you know, that cycle of systemic racism. So I think that's what we need to counteract.
All right. Everyone, thank you so much for getting up early and having this very necessary and heavy discussion. We could go way, way deeper. Unfortunately, time does not allow that. But thank you for being very open and honest about your feelings. I know, and they were tempered because I'm very aware that they are tempered. And I thank you so much for being able to speak your truth within maintaining that temper. So thank you guys so much. Much love to my offsite producer, Donovan West, and my in-studio producer, Larry. Thank you for all that you do. Have a peaceful, positive, and productive day. Stay tuned. Marriage Beyond the Vows is next. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Praise in the City with Tiffany Bacon on Praise 103.9, Philadelphia's Inspiration Station.